What is going on, everybody out there in the Warrior Soul Nation? This is Chris Albert, the host of this show, along with my brother Andrew Marr. And in this episode, this is pretty much just a random show. I mean, me and Andrew just kind of sit around and we talk about everything, and we get into everything from consciousness to human behavior to understanding how to overcome difficulties to fitness, Brazilian jiu-jitsu, all the way down to shit eating and why people develop fecalphilia. I don't know how that came up, but it came up. But before we get into the show, I just want to talk to you about some things we got going on over here at Warrior Soul. On the apparel side, for Warrior Soul apparel, we have just started up the Warrior Soul Artist Partners Program, and this is your chance to send us designs. This is your chance, even if you can't make a picture, even if you're the worst artist in the world, send us an idea, and what we do is we put it together with some graphics, and we develop that idea into a t-shirt, and we'll post that t-shirt, and then we make you part of our affiliate program, where you can earn commissions off of your own designs. And even if you don't want to take the commissions, a lot of people are donating their commissions to charities. We just had a gentleman give us a shirt idea, and he wants all his commissions donated to the Semper Fi Fund. We've also got our partner charity, the Warrior Angels Foundation, if you want to partner up with them. No pressure. If you want to take the commissions, you want to go out and spend it up for yourself, that's 100% fine too. But we basically wanted to give you guys a chance to give us your vision. Let us know what you wanted to see on a t-shirt, and that way we could help you create it and get it out there to market really easily. Taking these barriers down to actually getting a piece of clothing that you want to be designed. So you don't have to go through any crazy fashion buyer companies or anything like that. You can come straight to us and we can help you out. So go check out warriorsoulfitness.com. This episode is also brought to you by Warrior Soul Education, and that is where we put together digital courses to help you to live your best life. We just put out the Warrior Soul Fitness Foundations course, and this course is phenomenal. It takes you through everything from developing your own fitness vision, setting your goals, to developing your own training program, your own nutrition protocol. We have an entire module in there on hormones. We have a cookbook in there, and we have an entire module on finding your own flow state. If you're looking to take your levels of performance to the next level, if you're trying to become a better father, a better business owner, better at your job, if you just want to look ripped as shit and muscular and just look good for the beach, we've got that in there for you too. And it's a really decently priced course. It's packed with all kinds of information. So those of you who are interested in taking your fitness to the next level, go check out warriorsouleducation.com. Okay, and finally, this episode is brought to you by the Warrior Angels Foundation. This is a fantastic charity that was started by my brother and the co-host of this podcast, Andrew Marr. Andrew is a retired Green Beret special operator. He served as a breacher in Afghanistan on several tours, and his job was to blow the doors off of places before the team went in. And day after day, he was enduring concussion after concussion from the explosions that he was near, and his brain was shaking back and forth in his skull. And he came home from Afghanistan without a scratch on his body, without ever being hit by anything, but he began experiencing depression. He began experiencing a lot of symptoms that looked like PTSD. And so there was an issue there, and the issue was that his brain stopped producing hormones and hormone precursors that were keeping his body in balance. Now, this problem is a lot more widespread than a lot of people would know or would like to believe. And a lot of the symptoms that we see today that could be PTS could also be from these types of brain injuries. So what the Warrior Angels Foundation does is it puts veterans and service members who've been impacted by traumatic brain injury in touch with treatments that can help them to replenish their hormones and replenish the neuropermissive environment that allow their brains to reproduce hormones and hormone precursors that will bring their bodies and their minds back into balance. Andrew's extremely passionate about this issue. He's got a book coming out soon, and we want to help him in every way that we can. And the foundation definitely needs donations. So if you are interested in helping out this phenomenal organization, head on over and check out waftbi.org. Again, that's www.waftbi.org. All right, and with that, let's get into this crazy-ass random show. And again, like I said, there's a lot of different things in here, so most of you will probably find it pretty entertaining and funny. There's a lot of awesome information in here as well. Hope you enjoy it.
This is Chris Albert, and I'm here to remind you of one thing. Someday, you're going to die. Now, that's not some morbid statement or scary idea. It's a solid fact. Your time here on this earth is limited. And you need to be reminded of this as much as possible for one simple reason. To live your best life while you can. This is the Warrior Soul Podcast.
Well, it's been a crazy, crazy month. I mean, I think we did a show after the election, right?
Last show that we did was with Dr. Cher, with the H-Bot, if you guys didn't catch that one, which was right after the first of the year.
That's the hyperbaric oxygen therapy, listen to it. Yeah, and since then, we've been working. We just haven't been doing shows. So, we met up a couple times down there in L.A., we met up here, and then Andrew's probably about to come out here pretty soon, I think in a couple of days or a week or so. And we've just been going through this this awesome thing we call life over here, man. I've been training like crazy over the last couple of weeks. And I don't know if it's because I feel myself. I think like a few weeks ago, I looked at myself in the mirror and I said, dude, you're about to turn 38 years old this year. And I was like, fuck. So I made a commitment probably right after New Year's. I was like, I am going to be in the best shape of my life this year. And I am going to be the most in shape 40-year-old that anybody has ever seen. Now, you probably all know like 40-year-olds who are in much better shape than me. But in my mind, that's what I'm saying. And I'm like, all right, I'm gonna hit the weights. I'm gonna do jujitsu. I'm gonna do exercise throughout the day. So I'm like carrying kettlebells all the time. But the thing is, I also have to realize that I'm also older now. So recovery time takes a little bit more. So I have to put a little bit more into my recovery time. So every once in a while, I gotta take a little bit of a rest day. But on my rest days, I like active rest days. So yesterday was supposed to be a rest day. And then Sean and I went out to Joshua Tree and we did an 8-mile hike. And I came home and my feet are freaking pissed off at me. They're like, dude, you just screwed us over like you haven't done since you were 23 years old.
So the feet need some work. The body's good, the feet need some work.
Yeah, dude, the feet definitely need some work. And not to mention, they're all sliced up from jujitsu, you know, because when I first started jujitsu, you know, that's the first thing that takes kind of a beating, because when I wrestled, I used to wear wrestling shoes. But now I'm going barefoot. I've got cuts on the top of my feet, cuts on the sides of my feet, cuts on my toes, toenails.
So is that from dude's nails or?
Yeah, dude, no, it's from the mats. The mats actually slice into your feet a little bit if you're going pretty hard. But my toenails look like trash. So I had to actually get my toenails done. Not like I didn't get them like sealed and like have like, you know, nail polish put on them or anything like that. But had to get them cut, shaped and everything because I'm not real good at that. And they snag and they get to get all caught up in the
table. Oh, listen, man, like when your feet is your livelihood or how you earn a living or how you stay alive or keep others alive, then there are some things that I shed no expense on or I save no expense on, and feet was one of them. So I used to do a quarterly, you know, pedicure, getting them clipped and shaped and everything else, because that was just proper, you know, foot maintenance, especially when you're moving long distances and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I knew a lot of dudes that did that.
A lot of guys in the teams did that?
Yeah, it's just good business. I mean, you got to take care of your feet. So if your nails are all jacked up and they're causing you pain or discomfort or causing you from putting out, you know, your best effort, then you need to look at how can I improve that?
Yeah, back when I was in the Marine Corps, I mean, I used to be fanatical about clipping my nails, clipping my toenails and things like that, especially my toenails. I mean, if I got yelled at for having long fingernails, that's one thing. But if you're on a hump and you got a toenail digging into your other toe, that's like one of the most painful things you could ever get.
Yeah, you're not going to be able to stop thinking about that. So that's going to be the center of your focus. So what else are you going to think on? Nothing. Just how much that sucks for however long that is. So, yeah, man, do the prep work ahead of time. Go in there. It feels good. You know, especially get some hot Asian rubbing on you. It's awesome.
Yep. That and gold bonding the balls. I was probably a big fan of gold bond back then. I kept it everywhere I went. And it was because that's another thing, man. If your nuts are uncomfortable while you're hopping around, you're thinking about that.
Take care of the nuts.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So you said you wanted to be in the best shape. So let me ask you the question. What constitutes the best shape? And then how do you formulate a game plan to then go after being in the best shape?
So that was a big thing for me because I had to redefine what that is. And I think we all do as we get older because, you know, back in the day it was like, oh, dude, do I have abs right now? Is my situation all straight to go out and talk to the girls and everything like that down on the beach? And now it's like that's the furthest thing from my mind. Right now it's I want to be able to move. I want to be able to get out of bed in the morning without pain. I want to be able to walk. I still want to be able to perform physically and mentally. And how do I feel throughout my day? That's a huge factor. Like, do I still have energy by 2 p.m. or am I getting headaches? Am I feeling tired? Am I less energetic? Is my brain not working like it should? Because that's what I'm using more now than ever, you know. But I also, I mean, I still want to look good as an older guy, you know. I want people to think I'm still in my early 30s, late 20s, you know, and whether or not that happens, that's one thing, but I want it to be there in my mind. I want them to be like, oh yeah, this dude looks good. He can move and he's a jiu-jitsu player. So better not fuck with him. You know what I mean? That kind of thing.
For those of you who don't know, Chris has gone from, you know, the bearded bastard club to the baby face killer club now. So why'd you make the switch to shave the beard after such a long time having it? And it looks great, by the way. No homo.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah, I you know, I'd never had a beard in my life. And when I was in the Marine Corps, of course, like, you know, I have these Italian genes. So I had to shave like 3-4 times a day sometimes just to keep the stubble from coming out. And so when I started the beard, the original reason why I started keeping it was because my girlfriend actually likes the beard better. But at the same time, it's like when it's not groomed, it starts digging into my skin and it gets so itchy. And I'm not man enough to do it, honestly.
I don't know about that, man. You had it for a long time, but change is good. Variety is the spice of life, right?
Yeah. And that was the thing. I kind of missed it. And I'm planning on going to visit my mom soon. So my mom really doesn't like it when I have a beard on. For some reason, she just wants to see me without the beard. So, you know, not that I'm doing everything that my mommy wants me to do, but yeah, it's because it's what my mommy wanted me to do. So,
man, nothing wrong with that. Got to make mommy happy. And speaking of mom, mom's in Connecticut, and we're talking about being up in New York that first weekend, or was it the second weekend? It's April 8th and 9th.
April 8th and 9th.
For the Tom Campbell event is My Big Toe Cultural Connection. And so we're going to put out some information on that. But if any fans of the show are wanting to go out and be a part of Tom's weekend seminar workshop, we have a special deal where we can get people in through Warrior Soul and the foundation. So be on the lookout for that information.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you hear this podcast and you want to get in touch with us right away, just email me over at info@warriorsoulapparel.com and we'll hook you up. We'll get you into the conference and everything. It's going to be a good time. And if you have not listened to that episode with Tom Campbell, I highly suggest you do so. It's a really great episode. I think it's one of our highest listened to episodes. And we get into some crazy stuff. And Tom is a brilliant guy, you know. And as with everything, I think, you know, the thing is with consciousness or anything you hear about, do your research, read about it, you know, understand it, understand what people are trying to tell you, whether you are skeptical of it or not. If you're skeptical, I think you got to do more research on it, even just to understand what Tom's talking about part of the time, because it can get out there. But once you understand it, once you understand his theory, it's pretty phenomenal.
Well, you know, what I love about Tom is one of his messages is to be open-minded but skeptic at the same time. So here's what he means by that. Keep an open mind if you don't know something to be true, and then skeptical meaning you're going to do your own work to either confirm or deny it. And what also he's like, hey, all these things can be confirmed through your subjective experience. So you would be foolish to take my opinion for it. Like, here's the model as it applies to me. And I think, you know, we can objectify the subjective, and it's done through this, you know, scientific rigor that you can put into play on things that are not quote unquote objectively observable, but through your own experience, you can go and validate that. And, you know, that was kind of his whole message, without getting into the nuts and bolts of it. Be open-minded, be skeptical, do your own work, confirm or deny. Don't believe because a second or a third party told you something and you didn't do any work to, you know, verify that.
Absolutely. And isn't that good advice for life in general too?
Yeah, no doubt, man. I mean, it is, you know, you should be open-minded, but skeptic to everything. Like, don't feel the need to tell anybody why they're wrong or right, especially if you have no experiential, you know, experience with that. If it's just purely philosophical, then the best thing to do is just accept what somebody else says. And why would you want to get upset or let what somebody else thinks affect you negatively anyway? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. That, and I mean, we live in the internet age, and this is an age, it's awesome because communication is open. Like, anybody out there who has an idea, who wants to communicate it to others, can do it. Right? You don't have to go through any Hollywood producers. You don't have to go through any journalists or anything like that. If something pisses you off or something delights you and you want to help other people, then you can go out there and you can spread the word about it pretty easily. It doesn't cost anything. At the same time, what happens is there's a lot of people out there who haven't done their 10,000 hours to achieve mastery in different areas who are really trying to spread advice and some of the advice they might be giving might be helpful. Some of the advice that they might be giving might send you down the wrong path. So it's important that, yeah, you keep an open mind, but you're really researching stuff and you're trying to understand ways of tearing arguments apart in your head so that you can understand when somebody's trying to pull your leg or not.
Yeah. And, you know, again, like with Tom or with other people that you're trying to verify, you have to look at, okay, well, what are they really trying to get after here? And if the thing is, like, if the individual is saying, hey, don't take my word for it, you need to experience it on your own, or I want to make sure all of my content is free online so everybody has access to it, I don't want any following or no one is to follow or, you know, accept me as a teacher or worship or religion or anything else. When somebody kind of takes that mindset and they make that known up front, to me, like, I'm like, okay, well, this person's being pretty upfront, or they're really scamming me, one of the two. Yeah. But they're coming out and saying, hey, I'm not doing this because I want you to follow me and you know, come into my, you know, buy something from me or follow my cult. It's like, I think this information is beneficial. Here's the stuff to support it. And here's where you can go and see if it, actually applies to you and works for you, but don't take my word for it. That's usually a good place to start. Work. Is this something that I can at least be, is this something worth looking into, you know, or is it just completely, you know, rubbish?
Absolutely. How did you start listening to Tom? How did you first come in contact with everything he was talking about?
I saw some documentaries. I got into quantum physics just kind of out of curiosity, you know, going through all the different channels, learning about the brain, getting into neuroscience, getting linked up with Dr. Gordon, going to neuroendocrinology, and, you know, learning some of these advanced concepts started to make me question other things that I hadn't really looked into. So that kind of led into some basic physics and into quantum physics. And I saw a documentary with Tom in it, and he was talking about, like, you know, going and having out-of-body experiences and exploring the non-physical matter reality as pure consciousness and all these things. And I was just fascinated by it. And then, you know, understanding or learning he was a NASA physicist and then, you know, worked with the DOD on the missile defense system, you know, for a number of years. I was like, okay, well, this is an intelligent dude. He's got some interesting things that viewpoints or worldviews I've never heard before. Kind of be interested to hear a little more about it or see a little bit more about what information he's putting out. Then saw, you know, he had his book trilogy where explained his theory of everything. And I thought it did a really elegant model. So wanted to continue to just kind of find that information out for myself and went out to one of his lectures he was doing out in L.A. And long story short, we linked up and had dinner together and kind of friendship grew from there. And I had him on the show. But yeah, I just found him to be a really fascinating and interesting dude. And then getting to meet him and now both of us meeting him and his crew. I mean, he is absolutely a fascinating, brilliant, brilliant man.
Yeah, you know, I used to study theory for a bit back when I was a little bit confused and wondering what I wanted to do. So I was hanging out with the hipsters up at UC Santa Barbara for a while I was working on a PhD. And I studied theory. And the biggest question I like to ask people about theory is this. How has Tom's theory helped you to understand life better, right? Because I think in essence what he's trying to do is he's trying to make people understand life a little bit better and the nature of what we consider reality and things like that. How has it helped you to understand this life better, everything you've gone through, you know, from special forces to the struggles you met afterwards? What has it taught you?
Well, I think, that's a great question. And two, you know, you don't have to get into the larger consciousness system or the nature of reality or the double slit experiment or anything else. You know, when it goes down to it, his theory used by supporting science and metaphysics says basically when you boil it all down, you always have an option and a choice. And those two choices are on the opposite ends of the spectrum. So one being fear, motivated by fear, which you might not know that's manifesting as fear. It's coming out as something else. But when you follow that thread back to the original place, it's most likely a fear. And that fear is tied to probably a belief system that you downloaded, you know, from your environment at a very young age, unknowing to yourself. And now you're carrying out negative behaviors or negative things in your life that aren't producing the quality of life that you think that, you know, you should be living. So that's one aspect of it, kind of understanding, you know, fear and then what happens when you let fear rule your decision making or rule your life. And then understanding that if fear is one option, the other option is on the far end, love. So we have the, you know, diametrically opposed things, fear and love. And so at every decision, at every choice point, you have an option to say, I'm going to go this way or I'm going to go that way. And what it does when he talks about, you know, we're all a part of we're individuated units of consciousness, of a larger consciousness system, what that says is that nothing is by chance or something that you didn't help to create at some form or fashion or level of your personal reality. So if you don't like your personal reality, it's because that's something that you created either consciously or subconscious or unconscious. So by becoming conscious of those actions that are no longer serving you or have never served you. You just haven't been conscious of it. And the best way to become conscious of that is through the meditative process, where you can begin to cultivate or become familiar with an old level of self or old state of being that led you to think, act, and feel in a certain way. And if how we think and how we act and how we feel is our personality, then we need to analyze, okay, do I need to change how I'm thinking, how I'm acting, and how I'm feeling to create new choice sets in my life to bring on new experience? Because what Tom said is, in the end, what really matters is that he says, grow to your level of your consciousness. And you do that by becoming love. You're at the being level. It's not something that you're attempting to be, or that's your persona on Facebook. You are that, and you are that as evidenced by a large body of work. And so that's a lot of things saying basically that life is where you can be. You can be a victim or you can be a victor. Victim or victor. You know, the choice is solely up to you, and you can decide to change things and pick out a new probability distribution that is out there in the infinite sea of multiplicity of probable decisions or futures that are out there. So if that is the future, a sea of probability, then whatever you could imagine already exists in that sea of infinite possibility. So identify with clear intent what you think that future should be, and then have that energetic signature of that future collapse from the wave on down to a particle, which means it went from the energetic level all the way manifesting into form, into physical reality. So, I think those are some key takeaways.
Yeah, I think, that's the basic thing I get from it, you know, and just from having a conversation with him and reading what I've read. Now, I mean, when people look at it, you know, as far as explaining it in terms of virtual reality, I understand why a lot of people would be like, virtual reality, well, you know, and I think in some ways that almost blocks that major understanding that it's about love rather than fear. Or trying to choose love rather than fear. One of the things I really like about the theories is if you look at philosophers, the Stoic philosophers like Seneca, Epictetus, Marcus Aurelius, I mean, this is a lot of stuff they were talking about, you know, thousands of years ago during the Roman Empire, and just expressing notions that if you're angry, you choose to be angry. If something is making you mad, you've chosen for it to make you mad. And there's nothing bad in this world that can happen to you unless you see it as bad. You know, even death, I think Epictetus talks about death, and death can be looked at as a positive thing if you look at it in the right way. And that's a huge thing. You have more control over your fate than you think you do. And that doesn't mean that you need to be overly optimistic about your fate, where you're living in a false reality or anything like that. But it means that you're not trapped. Wherever you are, no matter how bad it is, you're not trapped. You're not resigned to some miserable existence. And the reason why you're not resigned to it is because you choose whether or not you're going to be miserable or not. And that's the big thing.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about determinism, and in a deterministic model, you know, it's already been decided. And if that's the case, then, you know, you are your DNA. You know, you are whatever circumstances in your life, that's just it, and you have no control over it. Well, if that were to be the case, I mean, what a horrible existence to live in, thinking, you know, whatever I do is irrelevant. It has no meaning or no merit, has no opportunity to change or bring about a different experience or even a different choice set. And what his model is saying is, no, you do have an option, because you do have the ability to have, you have free will, you are at some level, you know, you are conscious, and so you can choose a different outcome, can choose a different potential, a different possibility that exists in the future, and make that more probable than the current course of action that could happen based on your past performances.
Yeah, it's and again, I think it. I mean, the lesson there is it comes down to personal responsibility and choosing the way in which you want to live. You know, and that, in some ways, the way I say that, I'm almost like that's a very like big privilege we have here, living in the Western world, living in the United States, because a lot of people in different places around the world would look at us, would look at what we're talking about right now, and they'd be like, no, man, I mean, if you're living in South Sudan, or if you're living in certain places that you've been, a lot of ways, I think your choices become a lot limited, you know, in a lot of ways, your choices as to how you're going to live become a lot limited, a lot more limited. And, when we see things like starvation, poverty, things like that, I don't think there's anybody who's listening to this podcast who could ever say they've experienced it to that level. But when we go through something over here and we're having a bad day and, you know, we've got lots of work piled up in front of us, at the end of the day, I'm still going to go to sleep in a warm bed at night or sleep on my floor like I do sometimes. Even if I'm sleeping on my floor, that's better than so many other people. So it's easy to see how human beings could see themselves as being limited.
You know, it's yes, if they buy into that belief system. And yes, your people are dealt into different socioeconomic situations. But if anybody ever rose up out of that occasion or was happy in spite or despite of that occasion, then you have to ask the question, well, can I do it too? Mm-hmm. And the answer is absolutely you can. So again, there is different level of experiences and different levels of choices that can be made. And your ability to choose more options, that might be limited by certain things that you don't have any control over. But then again, there are people in these societies, South America, where you think that they're living in poverty and they're the happiest people that you ever met. Mm-hmm. And they're content because they don't have any idea of, well, I don't have my neighbor has, or we need two cars instead of one car. They've learned how to, you know, kind of live with one, with nature, and really prosper. So I think, you know, there's obstacles and there's opportunities. And you're always going to have a person who says, but you don't understand my story. Let me tell you my story so I can validate myself and you can both understand, you know, how I'm choosing to suffer. Mm-hmm. Or you can say, this is an opportunity and we can make some different decisions or some different choices and hopefully drive some different outcomes. But at least at that point, you're saying, okay, well, it's going to come up to me to handle a situation differently if I want to change it.
Yeah. I mean, I think in a lot of ways, all the bullshit we have coming at us all day long from other people's lives, from Facebook feeds, from Instagram feeds, from the media in general, the big media in general, I think in a lot of ways, all the shit we get thrown at us takes us further away from that ideal. And it sucks because we look at other people's lives and a lot of times we create our own reality based off of that, you know, looking at what other people have as opposed to what we have or what other people are going through or the course of other people's lives and being jealous and things like that. And, it's weird, but in a lot of ways, communicating with each other more on these different levels and letting people into our personal lives has been, I think, worse for bringing consciousness together or worse for creating new and better ideas. It's led to a lot of hate and jealousy.
I would agree with that. And I think, you know, a large degree is because if we don't have an ideal self already outlined or, you know, we have already created who we think we should be, our ideal version of ourselves, and we're not consciously going over that on a daily basis saying, hey, am I living up to this ideal self that I have? And if not, what changes do I need to make? Because if you don't have that, if you don't have that in play, it's really easy now to start looking for somebody or something else to give you validation or merit in your own life. And and now you're looking for distractions, anything that can distract you from looking internally or doing, you know, your internal work or where you have to do to improve yourself, and you're looking for all these different things that are out that could be alcohol, you know, the internet, you know, pornography, whatever, and you get distracted and you start going down this road because you're not actively or consciously pursuing your best self because you haven't taken the time to identify what that should be. And it's really easy to get caught up in this rat race and get distracted or caught up in who has what or how can I get what I don't have and then keep what I do have and not let anybody else get what I have. Then we've created, man, this really horrible, selfish mindset that's living out of fear or under the constant hormones of stress because you're living in a constant fight or flight mode because you're getting all worked up about things that bring no value into your life. Again, if you could just take a moment to center ourselves and understand, hey, I don't think this is not what life is about. This doesn't really bring about purpose or fulfillment. Let me take some steps back and re-identify who I think I want to be. And then let me identify who I am right now. And if who I am right now is not matching up with who I think my ideal self is, I need to become familiar with how I think, how I act, and how I feel, and consciously make plans to change those things so I can always be working to my ideal self and not get distracted by all the lights, bells, and whistles of, you know, our culture today.
Yeah, I think, going back to what we were talking about at the beginning, one of the reasons why I started jiu-jitsu, I started, you know, doing all this stuff after the new year was because I felt like other people's image of me in, you know, I was getting a little bit older, I'm putting a little gray on, which is okay, and I'm cool with that portion of my life starting, but I don't want to end up acting like people expect of me, you know, as I'm getting older. I don't want anybody coming to me and saying, hey, you know what, you got to start saving for your retirement. You know, why don't you go over there and ditch this clothing company thing and Warrior Soul? Why don't you go get a job over there at the map company across town or start figuring something out there? And I think back to college. You know, why did I go to college in the first place? I didn't need to go to college. You know, I spent so much time in school after I got out of the military. I wasted years, and I think like, well, why did I do that? It's because that's what everybody else was doing, and I didn't want to be a disappointment. And if I'd only taken a little bit of time and sat down and thought about what I really wanted, then I'd be way further ahead than I am right now. And I guess the big point is, you know, just don't do shit because it's what other people are telling you it's good to do. I mean, simple as that. And even your parents, and I hate to say this because my mom worked her ass off for me as a kid, and I'm not downing my mom whatsoever. She's the best mother in the world. But she was so adamant about me going to college and so adamant about me trying to become a lawyer or trying to become a doctor or something like that. She hated when I went in the military. And it's just if I didn't feel that guilt that I had about, not going with her wishes – then and I didn't allow myself to feel that guilt or really understand where that guilt was coming from, I guess you could say, because I think it's important that you feel it and then you analyze it. You feel it, you realize it's going on, and then you analyze it. You know, I think if I'd done that, then it would have been a much different situation. And I try to do that with everything now. And that's a big lesson I learned there.
Well, yeah, man. I mean, we're conditioned to kind of act and be that way and never think twice about it. And you never stop to think, well, what is it that I want? Or how do I best contribute? You know, what are my best ways that I give back? And instead, it's always this constant rush for acceptance based off of nothing that that individual really, really wants to be doing. And then you get caught up living a life that you don't want to be living because you're not doing anything that you really are passionate about or you think drive purpose and fulfillment. You're doing something because you thought this, you didn't want anybody else to think a certain way about you or you wanted to hang out with a certain crowd, so that crowd acted that way, and then you got in there with that crowd, and you realized, man, these people have more problems than I do.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, that's some of the fallout, I think, from that, you know. But, you know, that's part of the evolution, and then your evolution as a human being is realizing, you know what, from mom's plane of awareness, from all her experiences in her life, she was offering up the best advice that she knew how to give at that time. You know, I mean, we can get, and I'm not speaking to you here, Chris, whatsoever, because I know you love your mom, but, you know, we can get all upset and want to, you know, blame mom and dad for this and, you know, and say, well, you know, you guys said to do this and I did that and everything else. If you guys take a step back and say, man, were they trying to actually, was their intent to be harmful to me, or were they just acting on what they thought was the best thing or the best advice to give, which was probably something that they heard or saw somebody else do and never really got to analyze or get to that point. So you as a more evolved, you know, growing person can realize that, show compassion at the same time, and then realize, you know what, I don't have to go and be what somebody else, you know, thinks or wants me to be. Like, where I'm at now, like, most of the internal strife that I have is cutting the last ties that I have to worrying about what somebody else might think about what I'm doing or how I handle a certain situation, you know, be it with the foundation or with Warrior Soul or with how, you know, I choose to parent or anything else. If it's truly living up to my ideal self and I'm contributing and performing to the best of my abilities, as I so described, you know, in my internal, you know, chart, so to speak, then what does it matter what anybody else says or thinks? And why am I so worried? Why is that fear there in the first place about what somebody else thinks, who really doesn't have my ultimate best interests at hand? They're just spouting out some information that they think is culturally relevant based on, you know, what everybody else is doing. Yeah, and I think we've all, you know, we've all fallen in that category from time to time.
Well, yeah, I mean, they don't have to live your life. You've got to live with your life. You know, and that's the big, I mean, your mom, your dad, as much as they love you, they don't have to live your life. Right.
Yeah.
And same thing here. And I don't doubt that my mom was giving me the best advice that she could at the time based off of her experience. I put the fault on myself because I didn't actually do the research. I just accepted what people were telling me and then just went, because I was an adult at the time. You know, and that was the thing. I was just, I had a lot of guilt and didn't handle my guilt in the proper way. And that's something that can hold so many people back. You know, how much do we keep ourselves doing things that we don't want to do because of guilt? Because we feel like we're not doing the right thing. Because we feel like we need to please somebody else. And when at the end of the day, you know, you're the only one who has to live with you. You know, you're the one you have to live with for the rest of your life. And if you're not following what you really want to do, or you're not discovering what you really want to do, I think that's more following, more so than following, because so many people, they don't go out there and actually understand the world before they dive into whatever it is they want to do with their lives. You know, and you know, whether that be getting a job, whether that be entering the military, whether that be anything, you know. And that's the thing too. I'm so happy that I served in the military. I'm so happy that I was able to serve my country and I had that privilege. But I also understand that shit ain't for everybody. You know, there's a lot of aspects of it that you know, not everybody should serve. Some people that are like, oh, I wish we still had the draft where you know, everybody had to serve, and you know, I think everybody should be in service, but I don't think everybody's meant to serve in the military. Not everybody, certainly not everybody's meant to be in special forces, right? So you know, with everything we do, we have to understand what role we want to play with our lives. What role do we want to take in our lives? And sometimes you have to understand what you're good at, what you're not first. You have to go out there and get your face rubbed in the dirt a little bit so that you understand where your weaknesses are and where your strengths are. And if we lie to ourselves and we say, you know what, shit, I'm gonna go in the army and I'm gonna get all that glory and become an officer, Then you have an officer who was never meant to be there in the first place, who is now given the possibility of putting other people's lives in danger. So follow your passion. Figure out what your passion is first, then follow that passion, and then, you know, and really understand what your strengths and weaknesses are.
Yeah, it's having a defined, clear intent. If you can't, you know, get a clear intent, then how are you ever going to understand if you're getting closer or further away from it? But, you know, that again, that takes experience, and that takes different opportunities to cultivate a self that understands how to pursue different opportunities. So my advice would be to don't be in such a rush. You know, try to expose yourself to as many different and adverse things as you possibly can to add all those experiences into your toolkit to now become a more well-rounded person. And who knows, you might be exposed to something that you had absolutely no exposure to as a child or, you know, a young adult, and you had no idea that this was a real passion. Or maybe, you know, you've developed or derived some serious purpose from, you know, doing acro yoga. I don't know. But how do you know unless you go out there and you try it? You don't. And if you're worried about what somebody else thinks or what, you know, your society or your culture thinks, or it's taboo for some weird reason, you could be missing out on some of the incredible advantages that we have afforded to us for being born as a human. So it's, you know, it's our birthright to be able to explore these areas.
Or being born as a human in this time period where you can be exposed to all this stuff from the comfort of your own home, from your cell phone, from all these different things, you know, rather than staring at some girl showing off her ass on Instagram, use that thing to go out and learn something. I mean, you could still do the looking at ass thing, but go out there and, you know, look something up. If you don't understand something, look it up. If you always thought about doing a certain kind of career, especially you young guys, look it up. Figure out what you got to do. Figure out the path. You know, try and understand what other people have done before you, and then see where your heart is. Because that's the other thing. Like, if your heart's not into something, don't lie to yourself and tell yourself that, hey, I'm going to do this now. I'm going to be the best. I'm going to work. I'm going to climb the mountain. I'm going to be Rocky, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, me and my brothers were huge fans of Arnold growing up, and then Tony Robbins as well. And both of those guys had kind of idea like, hey, if I want to do something and I don't have any experience or exposure to it, then I go out and I find somebody who's been successful at it at some level, and I start asking them quality questions, and I start noticing, okay, well, how does that person think? How does that person act? How does that person feel? How does that person respond to these situations? And then it's really easy. You say, okay, well, how can I incorporate that in those same principles and characteristics that have already been tried and true in my own, you know, inner workings, and apply that to me being able to do that? And now you have a much higher propensity of being able to, you know, be that or become that. But if you're just going out there and you're taking swings in the dark, the odds are that you're going to be successful at something new are probably slim to none. So it's a really easy concept. They call it modeling. Go out there and find somebody who's already done it. And if you already know somebody in that network, then you can get one-on-one. If not, then go and read a book on one of on whoever is the best at that. And what did that person do? What did they have to go through? What did they have to think like? You know, did people tell them that they could or they couldn't do it? And how did they respond to that? Did they have a vision that nobody else saw? And did they have the fortitude to stick to it, even though it was nonsense, meaning it couldn't be sensed by any of the senses, or it wasn't in the physical reality yet, it was just in that individual's mind? So go out and find people to get inspired like that who've already done it. And then it doesn't even have to be in the field that you're talking about, but just looking at, okay, well, what have successful people done over the course of time? And then, you know, we probably should define success, but what does that look like? What are the great people who really wanted to make a difference and change a way of thinking? What do those people act like? How do they respond to adversity? Or do they see it as opportunity? And then you can start taking those and applying it to your life, and you're going to be better for it.
Yeah. You know, Arnold's book, Total Recall, I think that's one of the books that's had the biggest impact on me. And I know it's kind of stereotypical because I used to be a bodybuilder, but when I looked at him when I was a kid, I was like, this guy came from Germany, landed in California. Now he just gets to hang out on the beach, not do anything all day except work out. And then he gets photos taken of him. And then he walks into the Olympia and he just gets first place. And I was like, man, that would be so cool. And I told my mom, I was like, dude, I didn't say dude to my mom. She would have backhanded me. But I was like, mom, I want to move to California and live out of my car for a while when I'm in my 20s. And she said, Christopher, are you out of your fucking mind? What the fuck? And she almost backhanded me right there. But the reason why I'm getting into this is because, you know, everybody looks at Arnold and they look at that movie Pumping Iron and they're like, yeah, this dude's got it made. But when you read his book, you see how much work he put into it. You know, writing down goals, starting up his own businesses when before he actually made it. He was a millionaire before he ever won an Olympia. And even when he won the Olympia, the check was like for $300 or something like that. You know, and he'd been doing real estate investment. He'd run a bricklaying business. He ran a masonry business. And he'd been doing his own products and things like that for a long time before he ever made it to Hollywood. And Hollywood was just kind of something that he did because he wanted to do it, you know, and so that's,
yeah, you take politics out of it, take, you know, anything that you agree or don't agree with his, you know, personal life choices. What you can't argue with is that man had a vision, had no resources virtually, didn't have great genetics, and said, okay, I have a vision, I feel like this is my purpose, this future reality. What do I need to do? What do I need to act like and do today to be able to become that tomorrow? And who else is out there that could help get me to that way, you know? And he went out with it relentlessly, and he was never afraid to ask questions. He was never afraid to get to look bad in front of somebody, or, you know, to fail, you know, no fear of failure, just going after and setting a vision, finding out people to help you get you closer to it, and he got on it. And I mean, that is about as admirable thing I can say about anybody who said, despite whatever happens, I know that we're going to find a way to be resourceful with no resources, to have vision when people say you can't do it, when they say, you know, you don't speak English and you have no money and you can't get to America, much less go into Hollywood or be Mr. Olympia. He said, I don't care what anybody else says. To hell with that. I'm going to do it. Because he had a strong vision, and he matched that with the elevated emotion, and he went after it.
Yeah. Well, he did have great genetics. We have to say that. I mean, like, if you see pictures with that guy when he was 15 years old, I mean, he'll make me right now look like I was a 12-year-old boy. So it's not he's definitely got that, but the idea that he did become such a big actor without, you know, with his accent and everything, and he turned his accent even into something that was a positive. He turned his accent. Mm-hmm. Into some, there's an old story about Arianna Huffington, whether you like her or not, whatever. I'm not a big fan, but the one thing we could say is that she turned her accent into a positive too. It's part of what she does. People like her because of her freaking accent, you know. And even Trump's hair, right? Some people are like, oh, he's got ridiculous hair, but it's his marker. That's his frigging card, you know. He's fucking putting himself out there. He don't give a fuck that he's got a crazy, crazy haircut. I don't think any of his frigging fans give a fuck either. They just love what he says, you know, and it's part of his personality now, so.
So, you know, that's just a prime example of how you can turn something that you think that is not a positive into a positive, or, you know, find a different way, a different perspective to turn a obstacle into an opportunity. Because, again, you always have that choice.
Yeah.
You always have the ability to say, well, how can I change this? Or how can I learn from this? Because if we continue to do these same things that produce these same results, and we're not learning from it, man, we're caught in that vicious cycle, and the same actions are going to produce the same results. And so if we want some different results, we're going to have to figure out how to do some different actions.
Yeah, and that's another thing about what you said there before was, you know, Arnold's fucked up. You know, he was married into the Kennedy family, and then he went around and he had himself some affairs. You know, he had an affair with that woman who played Ivan Drago's wife for a while. I forgot what her name is, but
The Russian in Rocky IV.
He had an affair with her. He had an affair with his little maid. He had a few affairs, and the thing is, a lot of us, you know, we fought. Dude, I was a fucking dog back in the day. I was horrible. I was an alcoholic. I drank my ass off. And I think about, and I used to, you know, I had a girlfriend back then, and I was a fucking cheater. I was a little dog, you know, but I think a lot of guys are in their early 20s, but I spent so many years where I was like, oh my God, I can't believe how much I fucked up, how many times I screwed myself over by getting too drunk, how many times I was with this girl or that girl or anything like that. And I was tearing myself apart about it for years, to the point where I was like, dude, I'm not worth anything. Who the hell would want to be with me? What girl is going to give me a chance, given what I've done in my past and things like that? And I think a lot of guys do that because we all go through some wild years. You know, we go through our years where we're not too certain in who we are, where we're not, and this is not condoning that kind of behavior at all. I'm just saying that if you've done it, there is no reason to fucking hate yourself. You know, and I think that's why people tear celebrities apart when they make mistakes. Like the Donald Trump, like grabbing by the pussy kind of thing. Donald wasn't sitting there being like, oh my God, I can't believe I got caught trying to impress Billy Bush and friggin', you know, I said these things. He was like, I don't give a fuck. And we want him to be like, oh my God, I can't believe I said that. I am so embarrassed by this. I am so, so screwed by this. But he's not. He's not tearing himself up about it. Regardless of what you think of him, the biggest thing that's going to tear you apart is yourself, right? And you're going to tear yourself apart for shit that maybe as big as what Donald Trump said. I'm not trying to minimize what he said. I'm not trying to condone it. Or you might be tearing yourself up because you saw a girl you liked and you tripped over yourself. Or you might be tearing yourself apart because maybe you had a breakup in your past and it's your conscience that's getting you down. You think that you weren't good enough to make that relationship happen. And I think what we have to stop doing is ripping ourselves apart so much. We have to realize that we're fallible, realize that we're not really gods and goddesses, and realize that if we fuck up, we can build ourselves back up. It's not anything that can really hold us back. And I think a lot of the stuff we think that's holding us back really isn't. It's just a fucking illusion we're building up in our mind because we want to rip ourselves apart and we don't love ourselves enough.
Yeah, I think, you know, we don't have to take things so seriously, you know, that's step one, like, it's not that serious. And then step two is, if you're going to continue to beat yourself up, you're creating a line of thinking there that's actually reflected, like, every thought, every action, every person, every experience in your life is reflected in the makeup of your brain. So your brain is a reflection of that. And it's actually changing at all times. And if you're continuing to think about, oh my God, you beat yourself up, you're living by guilt, or you got in the breakup and you just felt awful, no one ever is going to love you again, and this person, you know, was the one, and you don't have it anymore. You know, do you think that that other person is sitting around the house crying for days on end, thinking their life's over? Or did they choose to go out and go do something else? You know what I mean? Yeah. So you've just given that person that power over you. You've just given all your power away to somebody else because you said something outside of me is responsible for making me happy or driving fulfillment or happiness. And you know, we're giving our power away when we do that.
Yeah.
And it's realizing when you get caught up in that thought process, Chris, again, what I was saying with the brain is, okay, now you're creating that neural network in your brain that says, okay, well, I am unworthy. And you start to feel like you're unworthy. And so the thoughts are going to produce a chemical, which is an emotion, and that emotion is going to start to become more and more prevalent. And so now you've gone from a mood, and you've remembered this mood for a few days or a week, and it's gone into a temperament, and now it's become a new personality trait. And that person, when you go back to it, you say, hey, why are you still acting this way? And it's because, well, so-and-so broke up with me 6 months ago, and I am hurt, and let me tell you about my story. Well, that person has now, just through their line of thinking, made their past become their future. And so if you don't want your past to be your future, you have to make changes in the present. And you do that by focusing on what you do want as opposed to what you don't want. And that's how you can start to get over it. And then again, you got to think, if I'm beating myself up, if I'm just criticizing myself and I'm not doing anything constructive to learn from it, or, you know, what could I learn? What are the takeaways from this relationship? What did I love about this relationship? Okay, well, I want to keep that in my next one. And then what did I not like? What did I not value? Or how was I disrespected? So what do I need to do differently on my end in the next relationship? And what do I want to look for differently in my next one? And let's work on creating your ideal situation for your ideal relationship and going out and finding that. Or you can sit there and you can cry about what isn't and what won't be anymore. And I don't think that will get you any closer to where you think you should be.
Yeah. It's crazy, because I think so many people hate themselves. So many people don't have enough love for themselves to actually do that kind of analysis. And they undervalue themselves. And in the process, they also overvalue what other people think. And they overvalue what other people think so much that we actually think that we're more important in other people's minds than we actually are. You know, back when I used to study psychology, I think it was something like we overvalue our presence in other people's minds by almost like 75%. When people have taken like different types of questionnaires, and it's crazy, because that also, I mean, it keeps us in hate mode a lot of times, because we think when we hate somebody, we think that that person's doing everything they possibly can against us. Right. Like, and it goes all the way down from the people, you know, personally, all the way up to, you know, the president of the United States. How many people are out there saying right now, Trump is personally out to get me, or who were saying that Barack Obama personally made these laws to make my life miserable. And it's insane how much we make these things make us miserable, how much we cause these things to make ourselves miserable. Now, when we think about politics, there's things that people consider right or wrong. There's things that people consider violations on their freedom. And then there's things that people consider to be protected, you know, and that they're willing to accept violations on their freedom in order to be protected. And, you know, I have my own political views and things like that. And I try to not talk about them as much as possible on here, because I want people to form their own opinions. But, you know, in a lot of ways, I think so many of us, when we start to look at CNN every second, or we look at Fox News every second, and we're trying to follow these issues because we're worried about how they're personally going to affect us, we overvalue that so much too, because we're sitting there, we're trying to process these news stories, trying to be up on them, trying to be able to argue with our friends who might have opposite political views to us, and trying to figure out, you know, what is Donald Trump doing right now? Well, I want to know, because it's going to make me more pissed off. And I want to be pissed off right now, because otherwise I wouldn't be looking at the news. If I could recommend anything, you know, limit your looking at the news. Limit your looking at the popular media. Get out there, learn about the world as much as possible. But these guys, the regular media, they're going to sit there and they're going to make you fucking hate everything. Or they're going to make you hate them, which I think CNN's doing right now with a lot of people, or they're going to fucking just try and put a bunch of fear into your head about what you need to be worried about, how much more you need to hate the president of the United States, how much more you need to hate, you know, the people of the opposite, and they're just going to try and bring more hate in your life.
Yeah, I don't see it as a good thing. And, you know, if it bleeds, it leads. And they're trying to get ratings. And so they're seeing anything or putting anything awful they can on there to basically that spawn these fear tactics that people respond to. And so if you think that the world happens to you instead of the world happening for you, then guess what? That's exactly what's going to happen. And you're not going to have any control. And you're going to start having all these things happen in your life that you just feel like you don't have any control over, and just continues to get worse. And the people who think, you know what, I think the world happens for me. And if it doesn't, I'm going to continue to go out there and make choices and decisions that are driving me to the future that I want, or that I know it's not only going to benefit me, but it's going to benefit myself and everybody around me. How can I look for a win-win agreement or a win-win? How can we strategize a win-win instead of somebody always just getting buried and, you know, talking shit about the other side? Can we ever stop to think and look at different perspectives and realize, like, hey man, are we just talking about polar opposite ends of the spectrum here? And why are we even wasting time? And what does it matter if this person doesn't accept or like the viewpoint I have? Can I just respect them and allow them to say, okay, we're not going to agree on this, and okay, well, that's where we'll go. That's where we'll leave it. Yep. And go on about our business.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely, man. Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm to the point now, Chris, like I don't feel the need to defend anything, to run anybody down, to like, oh, you know, no, let me give a rebuttal to that because I'm worried about what somebody else is going to think about me if I don't respond to this. It's like, hey man, that's fine. If we don't see eye to eye, that I respect your point of view, and I'm not trying to change it, you know. This is how I choose to live my life. I wish you the best. Go on and live your life how you wish to live it, and we'll just do it on, you know, different areas. You know, I don't have to, you know, we don't have to have these toxic people in our lives. And I think when we do, or we continue to expose ourselves to toxic people in our environment, then we're letting our environment dictate, you know, how we are in our state of being. I'm saying, well, let's figure out how we can affect our environment instead of having our environment affect us in a negative way.
Yep. And you also got to realize when people are going to try and force you into a corner on that, on stuff like that too. You know, a lot of times family dinners, holiday dinners, things like that, you're forced into these political conversations and you're forced to start to talk about things, you know. And there's a member of my family out here in California. I don't want to say his name, but when we go to holiday dinners, this guy, he has opposite political views to what I have, and he knows this. So he'll talk about stuff out loud. I will avoid it. I'll walk the other way. I'll go outside. I'll start, you know, having a conversation with someone else. But he'll just try and force me into these conversations, you know, about things like gun rights. And you know, he's very anti-gun, very, very, you know, very, very much on a certain end of the spectrum. And I'm just like, dude, whether he agrees with me or not, it's not going to affect me, because I'm never going to change his opinion, because his opinion is based on something that he believes emotionally. And when emotions start.
Well, yeah, I mean, shouldn't there be an opposite view to your view? How could we then, you know, be able to even gauge what your view is? You know, and it's understanding, like, oh, I can't, why would I even want to change that? Or I couldn't even have this perspective, or we couldn't even talk about this perspective unless there was an opposite viewpoint. Absolutely. You know, it's when we think like, oh, we need to change everybody's mind. That's when it, like, man, stuff gets messed up.
Right. That, and I think that, I think we're almost not able to talk about things with each other anymore. And it's because everything has gone to these emotional arguments for what we believe in. That's what we resort to.
I got a solution, Chris.
What's that?
I got a solution for dealing with that. All right. So we've talked before at length here about what happens in the fight or flight mode and how we can bring on and live by the hormones of stress by thought alone. Humans are very unique organisms in that we can make so many things happen in our biology just through thought alone. So I forget where I heard this, but it was like, hey, if you're having problems, you know, emitting an emotional response, try to put yourself in a, put on a TV program or something that will emit that emotional reaction in you. So like if you're just like deathly afraid of seeing broken bones or something, watch one of those real life discoveries in the ER. But try to watch it from the objective point of view of, I'm going to be a nurse, or I'm going to be in the ER one day, and I need to be able to look at this objectively so I can make the right decision on how to treat this injury. And at that point, you've just pulled yourself out of the situation emotionally. Now, you can still be very much in it, very much engaged, fully aware, listening to what everybody is saying, being able to give viewpoints and everything else. But now you've just removed that emotional aspect of it, and now you're no longer fueled by making these emotional decisions. You're actually able to act for the betterment of a situation. So whatever that is, like, take that situation and find a TV program that emits that same reaction. Or if it's the news, like, okay, how can I watch the news? And I'm setting aside 30 minutes a day to watch news for the sole intent of, I want to get to things that should evoke an emotional reaction in me, and I want to be able to zero that out and be able to minimize it and see how I can listen to all viewpoints and then come to different conclusions. But the key takeaway is, how can I be in that situation and not be emotionally overrun by it? And that's a really easy way that you can put yourself in a hypothetical situation, get yourself emotionally amped up or feel those emotions, and like, okay, well, how do I need to act now to minimize that? And now, man, you're starting to create that new level of being by practicing how you do want to be, as opposed to getting in an emotionally charged situation that's going to make you say something or react to something in a certain way that then is not going to serve anybody in that conversation.
Well, I've already inoculated myself a lot to it. I was on the UCSB campus out here, UC Santa Barbara campus, for a while. And so, drum circle going on over here to get I think they were trying to get Dick Cheney off campus, and they were trying to do it with a drum circle. It was pretty funny.
Because that works.
Yeah, that works. Drum circles always work, no matter who you want. In fact, if we ever get invaded by a foreign country, just form a drum circle, and I'm sure they'll leave you alive. But that was one way. I mean, I've been around that element, you know, my whole life. And I'm not saying it's a bad element. It's just one that I don't entirely agree with and has different views than me on a lot of different issues. I've got a lot of issues that I agree with them wholeheartedly on. But on certain issues, the ones, you know, that have been very apparent lately, you know, I disagree with them on it. And that's not to say that I'm a huge fan of the president either. I think we got to give him a chance to do his job, but it's just been such an emotionally charged. And you even hear me trying to justify everything on here, because I'm worried that somebody out there is going to be like, take something I say the wrong way. And they're gonna be like, which I really, you know, you're free to disagree with me on anything you want. But you know what I have a really visceral reaction to, and I'm probably not alone on this, but it's like a problem, because Shauna knows how to get me. Shauna's my girlfriend. She works in the hospital, so she deals with a lot of gross situations. But anything to do with shit, like people describing it, pictures of it, shit, things like that. If anybody out there is trying to make me vomit on sight, anything to do with crap, like, I get fucking disgusted. You know, and that's the thing. Like, when I served in the Middle East, there was sewage everywhere. Right. And it wasn't bad. Like, I wasn't completely grossed out with it by that situation. But like, for some reason in our environment out here, anything to do with shit makes me fucking crazy. And she was on the phone with one of her friends. This is why I'm getting into this, because everybody's probably like, why the hell are you talking about shit? But Shauna's on the phone yesterday, and she's talking to one of her nurse friends. And they're talking about their day at work, and their nurse friend's talking about how this homeless guy came in and he was shitting all over the place, and she went to clean him up, and he had maggots coming out where they were trying to clean him up. And sorry if that's vulgar, that is vulgar, but I started like hacking, like almost like coughing, like my throat up. Shauna's sitting there laughing. And everybody, like, that'll happen at parties. That's like a party trick she does, where if she wants me to get grossed out, she'll start doing that. And I'm just like,
that'll do it, man.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. But maybe I'm just vaporizing a little bit too much over here.
I mean, I think that's probably a natural evolutionary basic instinct that said we need to get away from other people's, you know, fecal matter because that's going to make me sick in the end. And so there's probably something like that could, they're going at the ground level.
So that makes me think, like, where's the evolutionary impulse for people who are fecophiliacs, like, who love it, who are like, oh my God, I need that. Need to rub that all over my face or something like that. Like, where does that come in evolutionarily?
I don't know if it, I don't know if there's an evolutionary process that, or that became a, productive for the society to advance. I think that's some kind of, something happened in that individual's background that made him choose one way or one line of thinking over another. And, you know, that taboo lifestyle, you know, got manifested, but I'm not the best person to probably speak on that.
Yeah. All right. We'll get off that. So what else?
Where do you think it comes from?
You know what? Part of me is like, all right. So
I don't think we have this innate sick desire to rub ourselves in shit. So I think that that's some kind of weird cultural taboo, who knows what experience where that person felt they needed to go in that direction for some reason, and now it became on as a full-fledged, you know...
Maybe it's Mother Nature saying...
Kinky idea, I don't know.
Maybe it's Mother Nature saying... All right, maybe Mother Nature, in all her reality, or all its reality, wants to really get rid of us, right? And so every once in a while, it creates these things where it's like, all right, I'm going to try and wipe them out by putting serial killers on Earth. And then that doesn't work. So she's like, shit, all right, I'm going to try this plague thing. Let's see that. And then, fuck, they're too smart. They figured out how to cure it. And then maybe she's like, all right, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to put a certain amount of them down there who like to eat their own shit. Maybe it'll spread as a trend, and then they'll all die from bacterial infection. And so that doesn't work. And so then she's like, all right, fuck. So what I'm going to try and do is I'm going to systematically reduce, I'm going to put things out there, I'm going to give them knowledge so that they're systematically reducing their testosterone levels, and they're not going to be able to breed anymore because there's not going to be any real friggin' people to breed with. And then that's good. So maybe she's playing experiments like that. You know, that's just something I'm coming up with right now.
It doesn't seem to be a very profitable system, Chris, but I mean, I guess.
Yeah. I won't be able to write any books about that. No 700 theory of how people started eating shit for me. So.
Well, I mean, there might have a whole community out there that's interested in that.
Yeah. Totally. So what's going on? What else is going on with you, man? How's everything out there?
Everything's going good. We're getting geared up for the move. The Marr family setting out to California here. Our house in Texas is going on the market here in March, and we hope to be out there just as soon as we get it sold. But life is good, my man.
Awesome. I'm gearing up for – people think Southern California is just awesome with the weather, which it is. I love it, but I'm gearing up. Waiting for that warm weather to come back here. It's been raining. I think it's rained every day, but like 10 days out here since the last like 2 months. We've been getting, wow. My patio is overgrown with algae. I'm like, I got to go out there with some bleach and scrub the thing. But here I am talking about my patio with my bleach. We go from consciousness to algae growing on my patio to the weather and things like that. But
and that's where we wrap it. But
yeah, dude.
We'll do this again soon. And next time with one of the our incredible soon to be guests.
Yes, absolutely. And we'll get back to you next week with some awesome stuff. And I will talk to you guys all soon.
Later.
Peace out.